and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for the nice comic book club. And now, here are your hosts, Be the Mage of Tonight and Never!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our Man of the Booth, Booth Man! Yeah! Thank you guys all for coming out. I don't know if you can tell for the pre-show music, but we are going to murder you.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Wait for it. I didn't know you had a harpsichord back there. That's really good.
That was actually live. That was live music by Booth Man.
Impressed.
You don't know a lot about it.
Yeah.
We
certainly
don't know a lot about music.
Yeah. Or each other.
Yeah. So nice to meet everybody. We have a packed show for you guys, so we're going to get right into it. I'm very excited to introduce our guests who are here, all here to talk about Smith Magazine's amazing Next Door Neighbor series. So let's welcome them out. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Newell, Joan Riley, and Simon Fraser! Yeah! We're back!
Oh, wow. All business.
Hello.
All business.
Yeah. Yeah. So much for coming out. We're very excited to have you guys here. As I mentioned, you are here talking a little bit about Smith Magazine's Next Door Neighbor series. So why don't we talk about that?
Nice.
Well, thank you. That's an interviewer trick.
Good. Yeah. That's why you're in the hot seat, man.
Well, I am the comics editor of Smith Magazine. Next Door Neighbor is the third ongoing webcomic on Smith. The first was Shooting War, the second was Josh Neufeld's AD, New Orleans After the Deluge, and Next Door Neighbor is an ongoing, true-life webcomics anthology, which is basically everybody has some sort of either asshole or bizarre next-door neighbor that you might have a story about, and Dean Haspiel, the editor of the series, curated and found a whole bunch of wonderful cartoonists, including his studio mates, Joan Riley and Simon Fraser, to come up with their own little tales, and so they're all on there, and each of these two has a pretty nutty one up there themselves.
Do you guys want to talk a little bit about what you did for this project? Actually, better than that, I think we have some art from you guys. Can we go to the next slide? Yay, there we go. I like how I said I think we have some art, like I didn't make the PowerPoint.
You might, Trevor.
You're trying to surprise
yourself. So, Simon, I think this is yours, right?
This is mine, yeah. This is Next Door Neighborhood, Seke Next Door Neighborhood, which is a story about when I lived in Tanzania, northern Tanzania. The idea of Next Door Neighbor was kind of vague and quite open, so I used it as a way of getting into a story I wanted to tell myself, which is about living in Africa and the kind of the different way of thinking, way of interacting with your neighbors and the people around you is, and how that has a lot to do with your security and your safety, is that you can't afford to close yourself off as people do here. And I thought that it was a good way into that story as Next Door Neighbor.
Yeah.
So I talked about it.
It says up here, in Scotland, the country I grew up in. Did you grow up in Scotland?
I did. I am Scottish.
This one.
You're intuitive, I can tell.
I'm very intuitive.
That's it. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a personal story for
you. Yes,
right.
Yeah, it is. It was such a powerful experience living in Africa. And the way people interacted with each other was so different to the way we do here. I was trying to work out a very short way of kind of explaining it. I'm not sure I entirely succeeded. I mean, I think I'm probably going to try and do a larger work based on that experience. Maybe not directly autobiographical, but something based in that environment, and to try and get into the psychology of how African people think, because it isn't. It's not the way it is here. It's very, very different, very much more open. People are much more sensible to each other than they are here. It's much less closed off, and I wanted to try and kind of explore that in this. I mean, it's a six-page story. You can't do that much. So I've tried to, like, at least open the idea up and then try. Maybe later on I'll approach it differently.
Sensible with a lot of purchasing of bribes.
What?
That's
your definition of sensible.
No,
wasn't there something in the piece about 50, you paid $50 for an extra, or something like that?
Well, $50, I opened up the idea of assassination. Death, because life is much cheaper there than it is here. But then life is lived much more extremely there than it is here. And it's one of my bugbears, after having lived in Africa for so long, coming here, just people live such weird, sort of dry, closed up lives. And one of the ideas I wanted to get across in that story, but I'll develop later on, is that it isn't like that elsewhere. People don't live that way.
Which country would you say is unequivocally the best?
It depends what you want from life. I mean, if you want a great time and to live a really good life, Italy is fantastic. If you want to be really safe and your children to be guaranteed being, you know, be able to walk through town at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then you want to go to Austria, Vienna, Germany, it's very, very safe. Tedious, but safe.
My kind of place.
They actually use that in the advertisements for Austria. It's Austria. Tedious.
I mean, I'd love to do another Next Door Neighbor story, because in Next Door Neighbor, the culture there is much different. They basically have a culture of denunciation. Your next door neighbors are spying on you all the time. If you park your car the wrong, I mean, literally like a few inches the wrong way in the sidewalk, or you're too close to the next guy, they'll report you to the cops. It's incredible.
Wow.
And literally the curtains are twitching all the time. And so you have to be really hypersensitive about this. And as a result, of course, nothing happens. Because everyone's kind of, this
is
really changed. This is Austria, this is Vienna. And I was living in Vienna for a few years.
I think you should do a series about, you know, all these different
paranoia
cultures.
Yeah.
Simon's next door neighbors.
My whole series.
Let's go to the next slide and take a look at Joan's work for Next Door Neighbor. Obviously a very different style. Tell us a little bit about your piece.
Well, it's a childhood memory that kind of sprung up for me late in the process of trying to come up with something for Next Door Neighbor, because at first I was thinking in terms of adult story. You know, I mean, like, as an adult living in New York, what happened to me? And I couldn't think of anything interesting at all. I mean,
you're like an Austrian.
In terms of neighbors, I just thought a lot of people are going to be doing stories about noisy neighbors, whatever. I'm not going to do a story like that. So suddenly I remembered this friend that I had who lived next door to me when I was a kid, and this weird relationship we had, and this weird fantasy game we had, which we called Hank and Barbara.
It's a pretty elaborate game.
You think?
Yes. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if we have anything on the next slide from the game. Yeah, it's just, I guess, the beginning of it there.
It's pretty much just role-playing soap opera.
But there's things like being
pretend I'm your slave,
like
you're going to put me in an
airplane, but not pilot. Not just,
oh,
you know,
that was that was leading up to Hank and Barbara. That's all kind of just, you know, regular kid play acting, make-believe.
All right. That's the term. Well, let's talk about this project in general. Obviously, pulling something from your real life is very different from writing something fictional. What do you have to pull out of yourself when you're writing a story like this? For both of you, if anything.
Pull out of myself.
Yeah, what do you pull out of yourself?
Or out from under your...
Emotionally.
Yeah. Good.
From under your kilt.
Yeah, what comes out of your kilt?
All right. Well, I guess I wanted, my priority with this story was not to be sappy and like sentimental. I wanted it to be realistic and kind of recreate the feeling of childhood. And
was it easy for you not to censor yourself?
Was it easy for me not to censor myself? Yeah, actually, I mean, Dean censored me more than I was going to censor myself. Dean Haskell, the editor, in terms of like graphic stuff that I wanted to put in there.
So you would say Dean Haskell is a censor, someone.
He's the man. He basically is the man. No.
It's just a gigantic thumb.
No. Dean actually has a really good editorial sense, and I trust him.
Dean's instincts are impeccable.
One last thing before we move on. Another little interviewer thing I like to do is research the guests online on the internet before we get here. And I found your website. Great art, beautiful art, great background. Simon, when I was researching you, I found one of two things. Either you are on the Atlanta Falcons, or you are a fur trader who discovered British Columbia.
Yes.
But that's all I found.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang.
What?
I've got to do something with Google.
You have a website.
Yeah, there's a university named after me as well.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, that's cool.
I can't help it. I mean,
how do you balance your time? time between playing football and
it's hard. You've got to learn those time management. And I've got a kid, and his time management skills are just intense.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on British Columbia.
hold on to that. Hold on. Those Canadians are going to be knocking on your door.
It's working out well for me so far, I have to say.
All right, we're going to move on with our first section, which we like to call the stack. Our first thing we're going to talk about is New Avengers number 50,
yes,
which is a little bit of a jam session with a bunch of artists and a writer. you guys want to talk about this issue? Did you like
it? Well, they spent a lot of the issues staring at the TV screen.
What?
Yeah, it was like... It's like watching my own life.
Yeah, here's the thing. So.
It's getting dark over here.
Yeah, this is
no,
sad.
I just thought they ended the last issue with them looking at the TV screen going, oh man, look at this. And then it was like three more pages of, wow, we're still looking at this.
Oh yeah, the bent over thing? We'll get to that in a second. yeah, I agree with Pete. For those of you who haven't been reading this, basically the New Avengers find out that the Dark Avengers are dressing like them and are popular. So the end of the last issue is like, all right, let's go get them. And then the first 10 pages of this issue are, we should go get them, maybe. Yeah. and the other thing, may I borrow this for a second? I don't know how much you guys are going to be able to see this, but there's an entire page, not to act like a total perv, where Miss Marvel is bent over like this, and Mockingbird is behind her, kind of like holding her butt.
By the way, isn't that the same exact panel three times?
Yes, it is. That's called economy.
When you have a panel that gets a story across of a woman bent over, you've got to repeat it.
Right.
To really hammer that home.
Maximize the effect.
I don't get what you're saying. I don't get what do you mean by it?
I'm talking about sequential art. Okay.
So, you're not bored. Scott McCloud in Understanding Comics does talk about hammering.
Wow.
Hammer that panel.
See, I wish I had seen this before I did my Next Door Neighbor piece. It would have been a lot more women bending over.
Hammering each other.
They did eventually move on from that, and there was some enjoyable stuff where you got to get inside each individual Superman's head.
Spidey butt.
So
they got Spidey butt in here.
There's a lot of butts in this.
I mean, it was a fun kind of thing where it was like everybody what they were thinking, and then Wolverine was just like, kill, I'm going to kill more people, kill. So that was enjoyable.
I thought that was boring. I thought that was super boring. Again, it was like 10 pages of this one fight scene from everybody's perspective, but essentially everybody's perspective was the same with slightly different wording.
Well, and plus they set up, they have the Hood and all his super team of supervillains come and fight them instead of Dark Reign, which is kind of a buzzkill. They're like, here we're going to get Dark Reign people, Dark Avengers. And then you get these kind of just random villains. And then they don't even show much of the fight. It's more about the artist drawing the superhero that they came up kind of drawing, which was nice to see some of them, but the story just didn't really hang together.
Yeah.
And then it ends, the big reveal at the end is that... Clint Barton is on the news talking to a camera. And I was like, oh.
Well, no, because it's interesting. It's like a bookend where at the beginning they're watching the TV, and at the end they're on the TV.
Whoa.
That's very fantastic.
What a turnaround.
It's amazing. Yeah. Incredible issue. Pick it up.
That's a character arc.
There you go.
Let's move on to talk about Green Lantern number 38. Pete, I'm curious to hear what you thought about this.
This sucked.
curiosity over.
Yeah. Alright, so it's a big... A lot of stuff going on in this issue where the Green Lantern has to save the day and everyone's... he becomes evil and turns into the Red Lantern. And then before you can either wrap your head around that, he turns into the Blue Lantern. And then the issue's over. And it's like, what the fuck? It was just too choppy. I didn't get to explore or enjoy any of the fact that he was just switching colors.
In the end, he's half blue and half green.
Yeah.
So what that means.
Yeah, great issue. Like
aquamarine. You know, hearing you talk about it makes me think, if you're colorblind, this whole arc is bullshit.
Yeah.
Pete, you are colorblind, right?
Right.
I mean, okay.
There we go.
Like I said from the beginning, bullshit.
I like this. I mean, this title is fun. This definitely... You know,
what is the deal with the difference? Is there what is a blue lantern?
Signify?
Blue lanterns signify hope.
Just like
red,
different
red,
colors,
back
like different colors of kryptonite, but
Yeah, pretty much.
Except it's Green Lantern.
Saved by hope, because everybody's being saved by hope right now. Everybody.
Right.
From the whole world.
Hope and change.
Hope and change, yes.
It's, I don't know, I think it's fun. This arc does seem like it's a middle arc between other things. It's more about setups than anything else. But, I mean, Jeff Johns writes the crap out of this title.
I liked all this. I like the way he's handling the Sinestro and kind of moving him from a villain to just like a character, a kind of a power broker throughout this whole spectrum change. And I think it's been great. I love it.
You lost me a power broker.
You should check out what's going on in the economy.
What does that mean? Is that a comic?
It's really good. It goes by the title New York Times. You can pick it up at a lot of newsstands.
It's like, it's too wordy.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the trade. Wattmen. Let's move on. Wattmen, probably the biggest cash-in of the week. What'd you guys think about this?
It was kind of like a poor Mad Magazine attempt to make fun of the movie, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean...
Or the comic.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the comic.
Gary Sinise?
Obviously the comic.
Gary Sinise.
But, I
Gary
mean,
Sinise made this book, yes.
Dr. Manhattan had a fun little couple of pages there where every time he stood up, there was something in the way of his junk.
So really, it's an innovative joke.
Yeah, that's never been done before.
But here's the twist on it. It covered up his junk, but it looked like a penis. So
really?
There you see how it dovetails.
Oh, right.
Dovetail. And here we go. You see that? Yeah, see the panel react to the discovery.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's funny.
I also like that bit where he was like, zip it. And where he said, let me tell you a story about a little boy named Shu.
Yeah.
That was good as well. Yeah. I liked all of those bits.
Some nice dialogue. What am I doing here? In a spoof book for IDW. Someone call my agent. Nutsack.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta say, when I flip to the first page of a humor book, and the first thing is Nutsack's diary, I pretty much turn off.
Yeah. Well, have you guys read, is Watch Mensch out now? Have you?
Not yet.
That looks like that could be.
That I actually do think is interesting because that's Rich Johnson. I mean, we'll see. But Rich Johnson talking about the history of the lawsuits surrounding Watchmen through the lens of the Watchmen comic book. That's an interesting idea. It's something that certainly has a lot of information going there.
Who's that written for? Who's that book written for?
This book or?
No, Watchmen. That's for us.
That's written for.
Oh, just Jews. Oh, man, what? I guess I can't.
The Hebrew readers.
Yeah, it's a lovely perm present. I'm very excited.
It makes a nice perm present.
All the jokes are just so bad.
Yarmulke stuff.
Yeah, I think we've emphasized don't pick this up, I guess, right?
It's exploitative.
Yeah, it's exploitative.
Every single panel has been traced directly from the original.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Dave Gibbons could sue. It's not even
Well, on the front it says the...
He should sue.
He's going to get sued.
That's not a legally binding cover.
Let's turn to a legally binding cover with Fantastic Four 564.
Whoa! No, I'm going to back that.
Violence.
Some of the jokes were that bad.
You're lucky that was a piece of crap comic, otherwise we'd be having some issues.
So far, in the 2 years we've done the show, Pete has not killed any of our guests.
Some more.
Yeah. Or other hosts.
This may be the night. We'll see. Hey, have you ever wondered what would happen if the Fantastic Four celebrated Christmas, but it was March?
No.
Yeah.
Neither did Mark Miller.
In Scotland.
But he wrote about it anyway.
This is
really boring.
I'm really surprised. This is supposed to be like a landmark run. Miller and Hitch together writing this, one of the biggest books Marvel does. But the stories have been really kind of predictable and bland.
Some of them have been really good. Some of them have been
It was
boring.
Building for a certain point, and this feels like they're taking a little break from, you know, the interesting
from
stuff.
Trying.
Yeah.
That happens.
It's going to collect really well. I mean, it's going to read really nicely in the
trade. I don't think that's true. I think it's just kind of mediocre. You make it sound like when you read them together, like they all kind of help each other get better.
Yeah, it's like it's a.
But
book.
I don't think that's true.
Well, no. When you're reading a comic, you read it. But when you're reading a trade, you're like, you do it backwards and you flip through it as quickly as possible.
Wow.
How do you read trades?
I don't own them.
This is like the Fantastic Four watching the Yule Log.
Yeah, it's really. And the story's about they go to this town, and it's, the town's perfect, everyone doesn't age, and Fantastic Four is like, oh, this seems all right, everything's fine. And the reason is they killed all these kids. And they brought their kids. And then at the end of the issue, it's like, oh no, one of the kids is missing. And you're like, well, I think I know where this is going.
Sam, have you been reading the whole arc?
I read that one. And it's like, Brian Hitch is doing a lot of work, but I don't see Mark Miller doing much.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful.
The art is gorgeous.
There's no reason for him not to reference it. I mean, Mark Miller lives just down the road from that tent, obviously.
All right, I can't take it.
Yeah.
It's a comic. It's only a vehicle for a story.
Hey, somebody put work into this. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Not much.
Not a lot of work.
Not much, but.
Dave Gibbons, yeah.
It's still, you know.
Slam. Burn.
Ow.
That was burn.
Would you say they got Fantastic Four?
No, not really. The last arc I thought was really good. This one I think is just very
important. Yeah, definitely don't pick it up.
Oh well. All right, let's move on to talk about Savage Dragon number 145, the first issue of Savage Dragon we have ever reviewed on this show.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about this issue?
This was also the first issue that I've ever read of Savage Dragon.
Pete, what did you think about this issue?
I thought it was fun. I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I'm wondering why I haven't been picking it up before. I wasn't blown away, but I definitely think it's a good jumping on point because they recap, because he's back on the police force, so you get a lot of recapping of his world and what he's up to. So I'm intrigued. I'm going to check out the next one.
I bought Savage Dragon back in the day, back when the Image started, and I was like, and I liked it, but I don't know, it just, it doesn't do, this is a good, it's a good issue. It's good if you like the character, you want to get back into it. Eric Larson
character
loves.
Obama.
Yeah, if you love Obama, it's a great jumping on point to this administration. Really catches you up what's been going on. I don't know what position the Savage Dragon has in his actual cabinet. Maybe he's working on this economy comic book or something.
Yeah. Of Savage Dragon, I've read the first two trades of Savage Dragon, like, probably 5 years ago or something like that. At this issue, and I really don't feel like I've missed anything in between.
Yeah.
Even the stuff where they mention, like, oh, all these people have died, I've gotten divorced, I've had kids. Because I know one of the innovative things that Larson does with the title, which is very cool, is Savage Dragon and all the characters actually do age, essentially, in real time. Which is really neat. And you pretty much unique in the comic book world.
Yeah.
But there's a character in here who says, boy, it feels like 1992 all over again. And it really does. It doesn't feel any different from the title was 10 years ago. So even though all these things have changed, nothing really feels
it's
like
realistic. He has like a little bit of wrinkles on his like giant green fin. And
fin wrinkles, terrible.
Yeah, his fins are falling out.
I was talking with a crazy, rabid fan of this series. And he was saying...
I think I met that nutbag.
Yeah, that dude's nuts! Anyway, I was saying, like, it's all plot. Like, there aren't any big ideas kind of underneath this character. It's just like, let's see what happens to him next. And when there's a big...
We don't let him hold the comics
anymore.
He's going to hurt them.
It's mine. You can throw it wherever you want.
It's got Obama on it. I like it.
Yeah, it isn't bad. It's not... anything revolutionary or new. So if you ever wanted to jump back into Savage Dragon, this would be issue.
No, it was
the time. There you go. What a glowing review.
That's my pull quote for the front cover. I'm sorry. Bausgard Winter 1152 number 5.
Yeah! Woo!
Okay, here's the thing. Bausgard is beautifully drawn.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's very nice fantasy stories. I don't understand anybody being like, yeah, over tiny little mice doing the cutest things possible.
They're fighting for their life, okay? It's not that cute.
They're mouse.
They're adorable mouse. Little mice.
Yes.
Exactly.
Damn it, you're right.
What's the gist?
The gist is these cute little mice walk around and fight on your way to animals.
Here's the twist, though. They love cheese. And hate owls.
This issue starts out very nicely. That's because the mice are very sleepy.
Yeah.
They're very sleepy at the beginning and then they wake up. If you like internet videos, you'll love this book.
Hello, cat.
It's very much. I read it and I keep thinking the Secret of NIMH is going to kind of cross over here.
That's what I was trying to think about.
It's very similar, except
you're looking for Mrs. Frisbee.
Yeah, I want Mrs. Frisbee.
I
want Mrs. Frisbee. The leader of the rats was named Justin. I'll point you out. And he was a hero.
The underdog, the under mouse.
Yep. And but this doesn't have kind of the twists of the Secret of NIMH where it kind of had points of contact with the real world. This
what about Fievel?
I feel bad for the owl.
It's a lot more like
it's real Fievel.
It's real Fievel West.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more like that. Than
there are no cats in America, and the streets are paved with cheese. Right. I'll have you know.
Come on, realistically, this is a good book.
I'm giving you a point.
It's worth checking out. All right?
I think it's quite possible at this point this is Pete's worst show ever.
This is just great.
Oh, Pete. Yeah. Pete, what do you think?
Actually, the art is it's worth picking up just for the author.
Absolutely. I do think this is something that reads better in the trade because I know you're going to kill me for this as well, bless you. But I've tried reading individual issues of this, and they're just a little too much of a bite. And then when I sat down and went back and read the same issues in the trade,
Little Mouse Bite.
Yes, yeah. Little Mouse Bite.
Baby Bite.
They were adorable. Delightful. It was absolutely delightful.
I've been trying to get the mice in my apartment to hold swords, but I can't. They're hard to train.
I'll try staples.
How many mice do you have in your apartment? Because I feel like there's another problem you should be dealing with.
I got it under control. I'm buying an owl, and it's going to hopefully take care of it.
Oh, this is like that three episodes of Studio 60. Nobody?
Who are you hoping for?
I was hoping Aaron Sorkin was in the audience, but no luck. The Umbrella Academy Dallas, number 4.
I love to be.
Yeah, keep going.
This series is totally awesome, and this issue is absolutely fantastic.
Wow.
This is easily the best comic ever written by a rock star.
I agree with that because when I haven't read this first series yet, but I thought the first one, I was so skeptical. Then when I read it, I thought it was really one of the closest things to the spirit of 70s Kirby nutty stuff like the Demon and Omac and stuff like that with a Grant Morrison whacked out psychedelic twist. It's really something good.
And I think the thing that's also really nice about it, you know, we said this about the first series, and I think we can say this about this as well, it's accessible. There's crazy stuff that happens in here, but at all times you understand what's going on, you understand the story no matter how far it pushes it, and it really works and it really builds the characters. In fact, I even like this series so far better than the previous series because that's I think great. It's done a better job of really building up the characters and making them all work together and making me understand where they're coming from.
They make it look easy. They make comic book writing and creating very easy.
It's the, for people that, know, it's the guy from My Chemical. Easy. It's the guy from My Chemical Romance who wrote it.
Gerard
Way. I mean, you look at that and it's like you want to read that. It just draws you straight in, and it becomes invisible once you start reading it. Just like transmits completely. Whereas you look at that Avengers thing, it's just like I don't even understand what that is. It just doesn't.
But there's all those passes to like distract you.
And exactly. So that breaks the storytelling. That's the flow's gone.
No, the story's about the asses. That's the thing.
Right. Damn.
There's a whole
Pete,
story.
You disagree though, right?
Well, I don't think it's just. I think you can't just pick up the second series without. But I just felt like this one jumps around a little bit, where the other ones were crazy town, but in bits that you could comprehend or at least be along with. I feel like this one, things happen a little bit too abruptly. Where, I mean, this is just being, I'm just being nitpicky because it is very amazing. But I felt like this issue, out of all the other ones I've read so far, where it wasn't as enjoyable as the other ones.
We didn't like the ones you read.
I mean, it's amazing. It's just that all of a sudden these two really badass, amazing, cool characters are kind of built up as, who's going to stop them? I don't know if anybody can. And all of a sudden, boom, they're done.
Except.
Don't say the time machine.
But I think this is totally fair. When you have, they are two time travelers, and we're dealing with a plot where all these different people are traveling through time and going to fight each other in different time periods, and two time travelers die at some point, and they've been built up as the big bad of the series. They're going to come back because of time travel.
Oh. Wow, great.
That's the thing about time travel.
It means that a story can end abruptly that you've been enjoying because of time travel.
But it's not over because...
Have you ever watch this show called Lost? Doing something very similar. Where these people can go through time. It's crazy. Go ahead.
Yeah, pick that up. Last thing we're going to talk about is Gigantic number 3 by Rick Remender. I love this series. This is getting to the heart of giant robots and monsters fighting each other and showing you their emotional core.
Why don't you just win all the giant robots and monsters ever?
Right?
Yeah, I like
nobody.
This.
I thought the art was really distracting in this. It kind of took me out of the story. And I really liked the first two issues.
Why was
what?
Why?
Come on, the robots and monsters are awesome.
No amount of psychophantic Studio Todian can save you now.
That's one of the lines of dialogue.
Coming at you. I just thought it took me out of the story, and the story itself is kind of it's moving, it's operating on two different levels of like this huge intergalactic like entertainment industry, and this one character who's like was from Earth and then transported to space, fought all these monsters, and he's back on Earth and he has to fight more monsters, and then the Earth runs into some problems on the last page.
Yeah, here's one little plot problem that I have with this book, and I understand, you know, there's certain levels of suspension of disbelief happening in comic books, especially when you're dealing with alien monsters and giant robots fighting each other on Earth, and it turns out the whole plot of the book basically is Earth is essentially one big soundstage, and everybody in the galaxy watches us. It's like, you know, the Truman Show, essentially. And this one guy from Earth is a gladiator, returns to Earth, just wants to be left alone, but they won't leave him alone. They want to kill him. They want to destroy her. Towards the end of the book, his brother, who's just a regular farm guy wearing overalls, gets knocked down with him to the center of the Earth, which is, of course, full of lava. And
plus, they take an elevator.
Yeah, they take an elevator there. Here's the thing. I'm totally fine with the elevator to the center of the Earth. What I'm not fine with is his brother gets knocked unconscious as Ryan lying on a rock in the middle of the lava flow in the center of the Earth, and he's just like, oh, somebody save me. When he would be crisped instantly. Mm. That's my problem.
Have you ever stand in the center of the Earth?
Not yet. Hope to someday.
Yeah. Well, watch Brendan Fraser's Journey to the Center of the Earth, and you'll learn that that's perfectly feasible. And a plot for an entire movie.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like Remender does a really good job of writing a character that you can get behind and understand, even though it's kind of child star turned warrior robot from Earth. But, I really thought the ending was cool and fun. You have the classic countdown, like, Earth will destruct in 60 seconds. And it actually does. So that was enjoyable.
There you go.
That's cool.
Spoiler. Cool. Would you say pick this up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we have to twist your arm. And that's it for the stack. It is time for our quick section, which is my favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions. And for that, we're going to bring out Booth Matt.
Booth
Matt!
Morning.
Hello.
Morning. I got some questions.
Rogue versus kilt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to have to fight.
Oh, he's got a knife in his sock.
I got to go.
I didn't know that.
All right, so
he's just happy to see me.
Our first question is, what is the best comic that has been made into a movie?
Well,
wait, the best one. Does that mean the best comic? Not the best movie. The best comic first?
Well, I think... It implies that the movie is good too. That you like the movie. I think.
Best movie.
Movie version.
Yes, the best comic to movie. Let's say that.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Translating.
Time first.
Well, I don't know. Road to Perdition, probably. If you want like a good movie that's been made from a comic, I mean, there's lots of good adaptations of comics, but Road to Perdition is actually a good movie.
I like Persepolis.
Persepolis. Good.
Does that count as the same thing? Because it's the same artist, the same.
Does it?
Oh,
yeah, because it's not live action.
It counts.
Yeah,
it's a moving
picture.
It's
an adaption by the same author.
I like, I think I have to vote for 3. I like American Splendor. I thought American Splendor.
Oh, yeah.
I like History of Violence.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, no, okay. And Ghost World. Three excellent movies, three excellent books.
Good choice.
I'm going to have to say Punisher Warzone.
That's a blatant lie.
Fuck you!
That's his actual answer.
I took his actual answer. I don't know. This is tough. You guys have taken most of the good ones. When I think of comic book movies, I think Spider-Man 2 is probably my favorite comic book movie ever. Certainly, that's not a specific comic book, but there's pieces taken from the comic book.
It's got nice. Nutrients.
If I go like this, nobody can see me.
Is it taking these parts is that legitimate? I mean, is this Watchmen is going to be like basically a translation directly from a comic into a movie? Is that going to make it a good movie?
See,
or just a faithful adaptation?
The thing is, I'm not crazy about that.
300 worked that way.
I didn't.
That much too, 300 to start with.
Yeah, so I thought 300 was a better movie than a comic.
Yeah, well, it was written kind of very cinematic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But Watchmen was definitely not. So to do such a direct translation of that, because when the first trailer came out, I was like, oh, they're kind of blowing this. And then I was like, how are they going to reproduce the way that Watchmen kind of dissects and really gets into comic books as a whole without having an audience that has a working knowledge of the history of comic books? And then someone told me, well, you know what Zack Snyder said is he's trying to do that with film instead. He's trying to touch on different aspects of film history. And I was like, that's ballsy. And if he can pull that off, then it would kind of have that same effect.
Yes, the book still exists is my whole thing with that. We always still got the book.
No, they're actually, I don't know if you're, they're going to go out and burn.
They're burning them? There's going to be a book burning?
Oh, no.
Sorry. Wouldn't that be great if that's what it, once something moved to another medium, it was like, other one's gone.
Movie's here. Movie's here.
It's over. It's over. Move on.
Great.
And then we wouldn't have any more Punisher
coming. They come to your house.
That's what's happening to newspapers, baby.
Speaking of which, what's your choice for
they come to your house to take everyone to lunch.
I thought we were done this. I don't know. History of Violence was great. 30 Days of Night. That was pretty bad.
Sin City.
I think we're missing a big one here, and that's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Wow. I'm so glad.
This feels like the idiot side of
it. It feels that way?
I'm including myself in that.
I know, but it also sounds that way.
It sure does. Raise your hand if you ask the question. Pete's going to bring you a special surprise. And let's get the next question.
Is it hard to get credit when you consult on a lot of comic projects?
That's directed to you.
To me. That's why I do shows like this.
Cool. So,
if you, it depends. There's a difference between. Well, if you're just consulting, you don't need credit. I mean, there's something called satisfaction is just as much important as credit. If you're collaborating and money, and if you're. And if you're collaborating, then you get some credit. So it's I work with a lot of different greats with genius. I'm wearing a shirt by Rick Veitch and a jacket by Paul Pogue, two cool guys. I work with a lot of good guys, and I don't really need the credit. It's more the satisfaction of working with these people and then seeing, you know, if I do some PR for people, if I get someone into the Wall Street Journal, I don't need people to know that I put that there. But that's actually lying because I'm telling you that right now that I did that.
But you get a buzz out of the fact that everybody in the know knows who you are.
Why not?
That's for you. That's your.
People know I don't need to announce it because I say here that I don't need to announce it. That's not sneak attack announcing it.
You are tricky. This guy is tricky.
I'm tricky.
Raise your hand if you ask that. Pete's going to come find you. And let's get the next question.
You could erase any one comic book story from existence. Which would you choose, and you can't rewrite it yourself?
Good question.
Well, I was talking to a crazed comic book fanatic.
Oh my god, that nutbag!
That old nutbag earlier, and his answer was the Sins Past storyline from Spider-Man, which is where they had Gwen Stacy's kids roll up.
Roll up. Hover.
Yeah, Gwen Stacy, and I thought that was a good answer. They'll never be used again, so it doesn't matter.
Should Superman have ever married Lois?
Sure.
See, that's a good point, though. Why is it such a big deal to get Peter Parker single again, but Superman is fine being married?
Well, I mean, he's boring either way.
Oh.
Damn.
Man.
Yeah, let him come here.
Now, how much dating did Clark Kent ever do? Did he ever meet Lana?
A lot of speed, dude.
Did he?
He did 5,000 speed dates in one night. Is what I think is pretty
wow.
Him and the Flash did it.
What would you guys say? Is there a storyline from comics that you would be like, out of existence?
I think if Phoenix had not been brought back, it might have made some comics slightly better.
Yeah.
I think that kind of established something that then you're allowed to do anything you want after that.
And Elektra as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm enough of an authority to comment on that. But I like the whole Dazzler thing. I think a lot of people would say Dazzler should never have existed, but I think I'm a champion of Dazzler.
I mean, I think personally, this is a tough question for me because I feel like there's... If you've written a story, it is out there, and I think there is always a way of dealing with it, even in something like Sins Past, which is really uncomfortable and stupid, but at some point, I guarantee you, in like 10 or 15 years, some author who read Sins Past when they were younger is going to be like, hey, I have a great idea how to follow up on that. Whether it is a good idea or not, I don't know, but let's assume for the sake of argument, it will be, and then everybody will be like, oh, they really found a good way of doing that. Similarly, we recently read X-Men Spider-Man number 3, by Christos Gage, and he's taking different eras in Spider-Man and X-Men's history, where they're working together, 70s, 80s, 90s, and today. And
nice.
For the last issue, for 3, yeah. He wrote a story about the Clone Saga. The Clone Saga is generally considered the worst thing, second worst thing, ever in Spider-Man history. This is a great story that was set in the Clone Saga that really worked with Ben Reilly, Peter Parker's clone, emotional center at that point. And it's a really cool story. Nobody, if there had never been a Clone Saga, we never would have had X-Men Spider-Man number 3. So I say, don't get rid of anything.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Wow. Oh, what? Except there was this one arc in American Splendor. Oh, get rid of that.
when he was constipated.
If we could retcon that part of his life.
Retconstipate that? Yes. I think. I'll see you guys later. I'd like to get rid of the joke I just told. I'd just like to get that.
Do you guys have any storylines?
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously the whole... I don't even want. But
go ahead.
But Mary Jane and the Peter Parker splitting up and her whispering to fucking Satan, making a side deal, totally hosing her man. It just ruined a lot for me.
It hits a nerve, it sounds like.
Yeah. And then making Spawn a rapist.
His wife is trying to make a deal with the devil right now. Really fucked up. So, you can tell.
Yeah, it's very personal. Very personal.
Yeah.
Also, I would like to get rid of, while we're at it, most of the crises, the final midlife crises. I'd like to not do with those. Plus, it would be nice to get rid of all the old racist comics. All the, if you're going to flip back, you might as well.
Get rid of all the comics from the 60s, and then maybe pretty much all the comics from the 70s, the 80s,
that's the spirit.
The 90s.
You're getting rid of the spirit here.
Yeah. What if we just got rid of comics?
What would we do?
I don't know. Go outside.
Not interested.
Comics outside?
Yeah.
I don't know. Cool. If you ask that question, raise your hand. Pete is going to bring you a present. And thank you, Booth Matt. That's it for the audience question. All right. It is now time for a little section we like to call the Week in Geek.
Yeah, there it is.
All right. First thing we're going to talk about is last night's best show on television, Heroes.
Really?
I'm glad you're sticking with that graphic. Yeah,
I forgot it was there. I've given up on it. So
this wow.
There's
more going on in this graphic than the actual show.
Do you guys watch Heroes anymore? Why care about Heroes?
Never seen it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Why?
It's on. It's a duty, a burden, a cross we bear.
I do it for you guys.
Oh, God. Is Guy Grunder still on the show?
Sure is.
I did a drawing of him for a bar mitzvah.
Yeah,
apparently you had a bar mitzvah.
Greg, you did a drawing of Greg Grunberg for Greg Grunberg's bar mitzvah?
No, for a bar mitzvah book for kids about to have their bar or bat mitzvah.
Who were really into Greg Grunberg?
He wrote the book?
No, he's just featured in it. Celebrities who had bar or bat mitzvahs.
Wow.
He's in that chapter.
That's pretty cool.
So I drew his likeness. Anyways, carry on.
No, that's fine.
Who's a fan of that guy?
Yeah, there was an entire section in last night's episode where Peter Petrelli now has the power to only take one power at a time. And previously a flight, and they're trying to break into a building. He's with Matt Parkman, who can control minds. And he's like, hey, we got to break into this building. What I'm going to do is I'm going to borrow your power so we can both control minds. And Matt Parkman says, why are you going to do that if we need to fly somewhere? Now you can't fly. He's like, no. Two people with mind-reading powers is better than one. Which is not true at all.
I feel like that's an argument two writers had about the show.
Yeah.
And they were like, that's good enough.
It also means
two. Put it in.
This is, I was joking before, I think the worst show that has ever been on television, ever. This leads to the most hilarious sequence of all time. Now they have this effect that
I love this, like every week we kind of gather around
really?
And you tell us about what happened.
It's like old man Zalman telling you the story of heroes.
Exactly.
Well, this is my favorite thing. It was great. Matt Parkman, they have this effect where they like go in on his face and kind of shake the camera a little bit when he's reading minds. He's
Yeah.
So now that they both can do it, they have a shot of him being like, and then they cut to a shot of Peter being like, they just keep going back and forth. Oh, man. I love this show.
Yeah, I only watched half the episode. It was a bummer.
Great show. I thought it was hilarious how they did the whole flashback, so super bad guy could go to a restaurant and get his toy car back. I thought that was pretty funny. He's like, no, we gotta stop here. I was here once. Oh, yeah, my car. He rips off a wall. Okay, we can go.
Yeah, that's a really good storyline.
Yeah, emotional.
Yeah, it's great. And then Claire makes out with a dude underwater, who looks like her brother.
Yeah, it's great.
Let's want to talk about Watchmen. We touched on
this
a little
Friday.
Bit. Yeah. Oh, I haven't heard.
Hey.
We talked about this a little bit before, obviously. But are you guys looking forward to this? And do you think at this point, this is something we talked about way back when they first announced it? Do you think it's going to be a hit at this point? Kind of an obvious question. But.
I think it's going to be a huge hit, is my prediction. And I'm looking forward to it, but I'm sort of immune to the hype, and I'm not, I've watched half a trailer. I'm going to see it. I'm going to probably love it. And the book was
you
my
know
favorite.
You know trailers are 2 minutes long, right?
But I watched.
Trailers are dangerous. They can ruin it for you.
Wait a minute. Spoilers? We read it, yes.
Right?
We read the story. It's not a spoiler.
Good point.
The book was always my favorite, and it was the book that I actually read it. Well, I read it when it came out, serialized, and then in a freshman English seminar at UPenn, and I called my grandma, and I forced her not to ever call them funny books again because read it in a college class in 1989. Actually, that's
you
how
forced
it.
Her.
I smacked her.
Big admission.
I smacked her. And I said, you call it funny books one more time, I'm sending you back to the
I gotta be honest. This has been a very long sting operation.
Yeah. You're busted.
It's personal. It's personal this time.
Yeah. We're nerds.
Mm-hmm. Your memories of Watchmen.
I got an IM this morning from my brother who owns a cinema in Scotland. And he says, I have 9 reels of Watchmen in front of me right now. And he says, it's so exciting. I mean, I can't believe it.
Wow.
I mean, the fact that there's a movie of this is just incredible. That's what I mean. We've all read the process. There's been so many different productions, and Paul Greengrass was doing it, and Terry Gilliam was doing it, and it all looked like so exciting, and it like crashed in again. No. And Snyder seems to have pulled it off. I don't know. I mean, you've got to give the guy credit. He's got amazing
billboards everywhere. I mean, I was driving with my dad the other day in a car, and I saw just billboards everywhere. Watching what used to really be just me running around showing people, check out this thing that comics are literature. You know, it's exciting.
For someone that's never heard of the comic book Watchmen, do you think this movie is going to draw them in? And what about this movie would
what
draw
is it
someone
going to
in?
Do for comics in general, I think? Is
I haven't thing. Seen it, but it looks like it will, because they don't. The thing about Watchmen that other superhero movies don't have is they didn't have, no matter how good Spider-Man or Batman is, there's only certain things you can do with Spider-Man or Batman, and because these were, the same reason why Watchmen was good as a comic, is that these are things that people aren't used to seeing, used to having done with superheroes and about superheroes, so I think, I'm optimistic.
The market seems to have changed a lot, because now you, I mean, after Batman, now it seems to be possible to have a huge hit with an R superhero movie.
Yeah, and a very dark.
Yeah, and apparently the adaptation of Watchmen is as dark as the book. I mean,
good.
So that's going to be something to see. I mean, if it's a big hit, I'll be amazed. The world will have changed, really.
I think it's going to, but the people that I've heard the reviews have been good. I've read some of them, and it seems like people are really wound up about it. And it's a great time to be releasing a movie since everyone's going to see movies now because of the economy.
It's, I think, something like 14 or 18% up.
17% up over last year, which is crazy. That's
incredible because, you know, that's incredible in general, but also movies have been going way downhill for the past couple
of years.
I
don't think Watchmen's going to shoot anybody out.
No. It's going to move. It's going to jar people.
Yeah.
Good.
Cool. Yeah. So we should go see that.
Yeah.
I'm holding my... I don't think I'm going to. I've read it. I don't want all the copies to disappear.
Yeah. Lastly, we're going to do is show you a little trailer that actually you may have seen online.
Oh, nice.
There you go. I am a professional photo.
We've been fighting a long time. We are outnumbered by machines. Humans have a strength that cannot be measured. This is Yon Gunner. If you're listening to this, you are the resistance. I thought I'd kill her. Something has changed. Taking human prisoners. Replicating human tissue.
Let's see what we've got here.
And in this future, I don't know that we can win this war.
This thing is something we've never seen before.
The name is Marcus Wright. You think you're human? I am human.
Drives me nuts that some of the lighting was fucked up in that. A couple shots there. It's just really pissing me off. Thank you. That looks pretty good.
That's a potent groove.
Yeah. The thing that I thought was so interesting is there's
a potent quote. It's a potent groove, dude.
This is probably going to be shown in most places before Watchmen, and there's images that I think are specifically pulled from the Watchmen trailer. So. You know, there's...
And it's the same type of trailer.
And it's the same music. It's that...
Yeah. You have the music kicking in as the ship kind of pulls up and turns around.
Yeah, exactly
you
the beats.
You have the throwing through the window.
Same beats.
In slow motion. Yeah. So clearly somebody is banking on Watchmen being the hit, I think. Yeah.
Well, I think the trailer of Watchmen is a hit, quote unquote. Most people watched it, so I think that... looks good. Yeah.
Cool.
I'm not big
I'm
into...
I'm confused. Wasn't the last one we took care of this... Killed them all? Like, what the hell?
Right, time travel. We can...
damn it!
And that's all for the week indeed. All right, it is time for our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn over to Mr. Pete LePage.
All right! Yay! This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you so much for coming. This is the opportunity to win $25 free dollars in the form of a gift card, Midtown Comics. Who would like $25 free? Simply raise your hand and come on down. $25 free. Yes, you in the back. Come on down.
I'm like, he didn't really raise his hand.
He was like, maybe. I'm not sure. Hey, what's your name?
Jim.
Jim, audience? Audience, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
All right. So how this is going to work, Jim, is...
These aren't going to be about comics, are they?
Oh, yeah. No, actually not. No.
See?
So how this is going to work, I'm going to read you a question, listen to all three possible answers, get all three right, gift card yours. All right? Here we go. Today's trivia is about Smith Magazine. For no particular reason at all. Here we go. Ready? Smith Magazine was founded on what day? Is it A, National Magazine Day, B, National Smith Day, or C, National Barbie in a Blender Day? That's an actual day. So it's either A, National Magazine Day, or B, stay with me, here we go. Or B,
National Smith Day, or C, National.
There we go! Yeah, B is correct! B is correct!
I'm going with the best. Since I have absolutely no idea, I'm going to go with the best contrived answer.
There you go.
That's the right answer, which will be National Barbie in a Blender Day.
Just look at B.
You were correct with B.
Oh,
okay. Here we go.
No, I'll ask later.
No, it's actual National
like
Smith
Black,
Day.
Blacksmith Day or
Smith, like, you know.
People named Smith.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I won't.
There's a lot of people named Smith.
I don't want to like interrupt the flow.
Okay. Question two. Smith Magazine is all about A, hot celeb gossip, B, storytelling, or C, dudes named Smith.
No, that's too easy. That's B.
Hey! Wow!
How many questions are there?
There's one more.
Oh, I left you 2 out of 3. Yeah, here we go. 3 out of 3. I've lost my
record. Here we go. Why Smith for the name of the magazine? Is it because A, it stands for Submit Metaphoric Inquiries to Hear. B, Smith is the most popular surname in America, therefore it represents all of us, day by day, story by story. Or C, huge Matrix fans. So it's either A...
Wait, how many questions are there again?
Three. This is it.
Okay, wait.
This is the last one.
C was huge Matrix fans, and A was the whole like acronym thing.
Yeah,
like,
right.
And B was the plausible one. I'm going with B.
Yeah!
Amazing work.
Oh, right.
$25. There you go.
Very logical trivia contestant tonight.
Yeah.
It's all right for
both of you. People tell you the answers.
Yeah. You know, extra points for
thinking about it. Good job. As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. What are you looking forward to, Pete?
I'm going to have to say you plugged it before, the Spider-Man X-Men number 4-4. I've been enjoying the time jumping and the different
time artwork. Traveling, if you will.
No, not that.
The art, especially on the series.
Oh, it's been amazing, yeah.
I'm looking forward to Cable number 12. I've been really liking the series, and it's kicking off this crossover with X-Force.
Age of the Century number 6.
Six.
Yeah, this is, we actually had a chance to read it. It's excellent.
Yeah.
If you don't, for whatever reason, like the character of Century, and I do think you're wrong about that, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Read this book anyway. Great book. Really fun. Good old school comics mixed with new school comics. You can even read this issue by itself. Anyway.
Old school comics. Like, you know.
Is that
ancient,
what I said?
Ancient shit.
Is that what I said? Because I stand by that. Jeff, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the Shazam Monster Society of Evil trade paperback by Jeff Smith, because I thought that's one of a handful of excellent comics that you can give to a kid. Excellent superhero smart comics that you can give to a kid who's 8 and under.
Yes.
And so that to me would be that would be one of my top few gateway comics I give to a little kid, get them hooked.
Cool.
And it's excellent.
And I know this is going to drive you crazy. besides Next Door Neighbor, plug only one thing that you really think people should look forward to.
Okay, the thing to look forward to would be, in the spirit of Watchmen, is I'm wearing a shirt here. See, it says, and it's a book coming out in April by Rick Veitch. Rick Veitch is Alan Moore's most frequent collaborator. Yes. Did Swamp Thing with him. And this is a book called Brat Pack. And before The Boys, before Authority, before Wanted, Brat Pack is like a twisted take on the Teen Titans. And that comes out, remastered, came out in 93, comes out in April, and that's awesome.
That was an awesome book.
Yeah. There you go.
All right.
That is not an audience play.
Yeah.
And where can people check out Next Door Neighbor?
Next Door Neighbor is smithmag.net/nextdoorneighbor.
And when are new comics uploaded?
Every other Monday, including this coming Monday.
What are you looking forward to?
Well, I perused the list. I wouldn't say anything is really on my list, but but I would say that there's an anthology I have a piece in that I think is pretty interesting, not just because I have a piece in it, called I Saw You. It's all comics inspired by Missed Connections, and it's edited by Julia Wirtz of Fart Party fame. So I would say check that out. My story doesn't have any farting in it.
Nailed it.
I promise.
You nailed it.
Cool. What else? Plug something else here coming up.
Oh, I illustrated a 6-page story in Harvey P. Carr's comics adaptation of Studs Terkel's Working, which is coming out in May or June. I'm not sure which.
And as I mentioned to you backstage, I was in a musical version.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Wait, who are you pointing at right
there? Studs Terkel.
Alex Delvin, you're our fan, right here. Stay tuned.
I'll be returning to the stage in my solo version of the musical Working after the show in the lobby. So please hang out.
Great
for that.
Choice. What's the, if I may, what's the Studs Terkel story? Are you allowed to say that you illustrated?
The story I illustrated, it's called Barbara Terwilliger, and it's an interview with this woman who is now, at the time of the interview, she is financially independent, but she's talking about, in the past when she had to work, how important work was. And so there's a, you know, sort of inherent irony there, where she's saying work is really gorgeous, it's essential, you have to work, and yet she's sort of idling on the couch all day drinking tea and wondering.
Classic
to
Williger.
Yeah. Yeah, see? It's just
I
so
like
hard.
Studs Terkel, his stuff's awesome. I love his
Me too.
Yeah,
it
should be a good book.
I do too. I love his musical work. Okay, cool. Simon, what are you looking forward to?
Can you tell me, is Haunted Tank still being drawn by Henry Flood?
I don't think so. This is a new series, and it's not.
All right, there's not that I'm going to recommend it. There's a Doctor Who Classics series, number 2, which is stuff reprinted from the old Doctor Who Weekly magazine in the UK, which is drawn by people like Dave Gibbons, David Lloyd, and some really classy artists and writers work in there. What's his name? Steve Moore, good friend of Alan Moore, also wrote a bunch of stuff there, which is great. Has been reprinted. I can recommend that because I grew up reading that stuff, and that's what made me the man I am today.
Where is his address?
He's got a knife in his sock, man. That's all I'm going to do.
And plug something you have coming up.
I have a book coming out called Nicolai Dante, which I do for 2000 AD every week. It's called The Beast of Rudenstein. It's Nicolai Dante, Volume 9. So we've been doing this for a while now, and there's some good stuff in it.
Time tested.
It's me drawing it, and also John M. Burns, who's something of a hidden gem of Parkland artists. He's a very old school talent. He's been around for a long, long time, and we're very happy to have him drawing Dante.
And when's your next game?
Yeah.
With the Atlanta Falcons.
Yes,
I have no idea.
If anyone wants to buy some fur, he'll be up front. It's the perfect time of year for it.
Come on the show, we'll make fun of your name. A couple of things to plug before we go. Next week, we're going to have Corin Shadby, who's the creator, author, illustrator of In the Flesh, a really great erotic anthology, which Pete loves. That sort of thing.
Alex Dalvin for the show.
All right.
It's
very good.
Erotic fiction.
Brendan McGinley is also going to be on the show. He's the creator of Heist, so I'm very excited about that. You can check us out almost every day of the week at youtube.com/comicbookclub. A couple of you we want to thank before we go. We want to thank Jeff for being on the show.
Yeah!
Jones! We're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Please tell your friends good night.
Thank you.
Thank you. I know what you need.